Okay, we continue in Maseches Kedushin, Lamed Aleph, Amid Beis, 31b. We're not quite halfway down the page, about 15 lines down the page. We're going to start, we're continuing with more statements about what people did to honor their parents. Now we come to what Rabbi Yosef did. Rabbi Yosef ki havashama kol kara de'ime, whenever Rabbi Yosef heard even the footsteps of his mother coming, just the footsteps, what did he do? Amar, he said, ikum mikame shchinat asya, I shall stand before the divine presence which is approaching. Remember, the Gemara earlier said that when a person honors his parents, God considers it as if he's residing within the parents and getting the honor. So when his mother was coming, says the Shekhinah is coming. So again, you see how far people appreciated the mitzvah of honoring their parents. Now, this is not an easy mitzvah to do. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan says, Ashrei mi shaloh haman. Fortunate is someone who never saw his parents, born a complete orphan. Why? Rashi explains, since it's almost impossible to honor one's parents properly, you'll eventually be punished for not treating them properly. So really, it's better to not have any kids, not have any parents, to avoid that problem. In other words, we don't wish our parents dead, but, you know, you're pretty lucky. You know, people who say, oh, it's terrible, he's an orphan, it's terrible. There are certain, you know, silver lining. He doesn't have to ever get punished for not honoring his parents properly, which is most likely going to happen.
Isn't that a kind of terrible thing to say?
He's trying to emphasize how very important this mitzvah is and how most people don't do it properly, which I think you could see, look out in the world today. You know,
no, I get that, but why not just
say, he's just saying he's fortunate, that's all.
Fortunate,
and so that there's a way of consoling orphans. It's a way of consoling orphans. Rabbi Yochanan ki avrasa imo meisavi. Here's an example. And now you wonder why Rabbi Yochanan said it, guys. Rabbi Yochanan, when his mother was pregnant, his father died. Rabbi Yochanan himself. And then Yeladaso, when she gave birth to Rabbi Yochanan, Mesa Imo, his mother died as well. So therefore he says, I'm a fortunate person. He had to look at his life in a positive way. So I never had to worry about transgressing, not honoring my parents properly. And similarly, V'chein Abaye, the same thing happened to Abaye. He never saw his parents. That's what Gemara says. Gemara asks a question on that last historical fact. Aini, however, it appears, what are you talking about? Abaye never saw his parents. Amar Abaye, but look what Abaye said in the yeshiva once. He said, Amra li aim, my mother once told me. What do you mean if he never saw his mother? How could he say, my mother once told me? The answer is no, he still didn't have a mother, but Ahime Rabbi Nisei Havoy. What he was saying was his nurse. The person who was taking care of his caregiver, so he gave her respect. He called her his mother, but never was his mother. So you see two great rabbis who did not have parents at all. Ravasi Avale Ahe Ima Zakena. Ravasi had an elderly mother. Amrale, the mother said, Ba'ina Tachshitan, I'd like some jewelry. Well, Avadla, he therefore made some jewelry for her. I guess he was a craftsman. He made some jewelry for her. Then she says, well, you know, she was a widow. So, Ve'ina Gavra, I want a husband. Okay, you want to find a husband. So, Nayin Lux, I'm going to look into one for you, Mom. I'll see if I can find you a husband. But wait a minute, now she took it the next step. Ve'ina Gavra, the Shaper Kavaseich, I want a husband as handsome as you. And that's not going to be possible because, Ravasi? Was a young fellow, and she was an older woman. I want to imagine a 6-year-old lady wants a 25-year-old man for a
toy.
Right. Anyway, he began to see that his mother really was not 100% of her senses. Okay. Anyway, Shavka va'azal la'ara de Yisrael. So Ravasi left her and went to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now look over here in the notes. Yeah, that's what he's saying. He saw that his mother was demented. Now, the Rambam learns from this story that when it comes impossible to care for parents because of their mental state, a child may leave them, but should first arrange for someone else to care for them in a fitting manner. Ravasi assuredly did before he left his mother. Now, it's interesting. Where did he go now? He went to Israel. Now, let's think about this. Why wasn't he in Israel to begin with? We could speculate, but the simple answer is he was honoring his mother. He was honoring his mother. As long as the mitzvah wasn't operational anymore, the mother became demented, you can't really be honoring her because she doesn't know what she's saying. So he might as well go to Eretz Yisrael. Shama de ka'asav asrei. Ravasi heard that she was coming after him to Eretz Yisrael. She went after him. So now he asked his Rebbe a question. Also look at me to Rabbi Yochanan. He went to Rabbi Yochanan in Amrele. He asked them the following. Am I permitted to leave the Holy Land now to go outside to pick up my mother on the way? Amrele, asur, it's prohibited to leave Eretz Yisrael unless you really have to. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun over here. First, he asks, what's in general, can you leave Eretz Yisrael to Israel? Not regarding the mother. Can one leave, in general? So he said, no. Now he added the next point. Likras imama, what if it is to meet my mother? Now I'm doing the mitzvah of meeting my mother to go outside of Eretz Yisrael. Look what he says. I'm not sure. I don't know the answer. I'm not sure if the mitzvah that honors one's parents overrides the prohibition against leaving Eretz Yisrael. I'm not sure what the law is. Anyway, so what happened? Yisrach portos, Ravasi waited a short while, and hadar us, and then he returned to Rabbi Yochanan. And he went to Yochanan. Amar le, Rabbi Yochanan said to him, Asi nisratzi, and then he waited to get the answer. He says, Asi nisratzi, let's say, Asi, you wish to leave. And I see you want to leave. He didn't give him an answer, but he said, I see you want to leave, you're coming again. So what does he say? Hamakom yachzir chalasham. Hashem should have you return in peace. And that is, you should go back to Babylonia in peace. Right? So Rabbi Yochanan was thinking that Ravasi really wanted to go back to Babel and take care of his mother. So he blessed him, he should go in peace. But the truth is, as the notes say, Ravasi really came to Rabbi Yochanan, that if Rabbi Yochanan had reached a decision on his earlier question, whether he could go even temporarily or not. That's what he thought it was. While Rabbi Yochanan thought, no, he just really wants to go. So anyway, also l'kaimid Rabbi Loser, Ravasi now wasn't sure what Rabbi Yochanan had said to him. I see you want to go in peace. So he goes to Rabbi Eliezer, and he wants to know what's going on. And he's worried. Amar le'chas v'shalom dilma mirsich resach. Maybe I got Rabbi Yochanan angry for wanting to leave. Maybe he gave me an angry answer. Amar le, so the other rabbi said, Marmel, so what did he say to you exactly? I could maybe figure out from what he said. Amar le, he said, Amakom yachzir chalashom, Hashem should return you in peace. He says, oh, if he said that, Amar le, vim isa derasach, if he really was angry, he wouldn't have given you such a blessing. So he wasn't angry at you. So it wasn't upset. He thought you want to go long term to take care of your mother, but he wasn't angry at you. Anyway, so what happened? Adahachi v'achi, in the meantime, Shamal Arona de Kasi Rasi heard that his mother's coffin was approaching. In other words, he left Eretz Yisrael, and he was going to meet her. He decided to go. And in the meantime, he left. He found out that the mother died. So Amri said, Yadi, if I knew that she would have died before I reached her, Lanafke would never have left Eretz Yisrael to even meet her. Right? So now the question is, we're going to have to see. It seems that she died. He figured, if I knew she was dead, I wouldn't have come. So we'll have to see, you know, what kind of honor you have to give to a deceased parent. Be that as it may, he would not have gone if he felt that she was not alive. Okay. Now the Gemara, while we talk about a mother who now has just died, Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis bring a braisa that teaches the following about honoring parents. It says, "Mechavdo b'chayav," you honor a parent in their lifetime. "Umechavdo b'moso," you honor them after their lifetime, after their death. How is that? The Braisa will elaborate. Regarding one specific situation, "B'chayav keitzad," how do you honor a parent when they're alive? Well, hanishma b'davar aviv l'makom, if in a certain place, he's saying if in a certain place one will be heard for the sake of his father, what does that mean? It means, look at the notes. It says, the son knows that the local populace respects his father and will comply with any request made in his father's name. Okay, in a place where people are respectful, and if he makes a request, and he says it, you know, on behalf of his father, people are going to listen to it, right? It's a place where people listen to their father's honor. So now what he, and sometimes he'll get things because of the father's, clout. So lo yomer, he shouldn't abuse that. He shouldn't say, shalchuni bishvil asmi, dispatch me for my own sake. Okay. Ma'aruni bishvil asmi, hurry me along for my own sake. Patruni bishvil asmi, dismiss me for my own sake. In other words, if the guy knows that his father's got clout and he needs certain favors, he shouldn't be saying, do me a personal favor. But rather, elakula bishvilaba, but rather say, do it for the sake of my father. In other words, even though the guy knows, they would do it for him. They honor him too. But he knows they honor their father, so he knows, you say, you know, do my father a favor and help me out. Okay? Because that way you're showing honor to your father. He's showing the see, my father is a very important person, and look what I'm getting. I'm getting you for that. All right? not for me. Now look at the end of this footnote, though. But that's only if the father's respect is, let's say, equal to the son's. Or if the father's respect in that place less than the son, requesting a favor for the father's sake could possibly besmirch his own honor, because they might not grant it. So then, And therefore the father's honor will be denigrated, because do it for my father's sake. Your father, what kind of bum was he that I should do that? Well, and they're not really honoring your father. Then just say it on your sake, because that way your father's honor will not be impinged. So that's an example of how you honor him in his lifetime, where you use his clout to get things, and it shows that he's very respected. That's in his lifetime. B'moso, how about in his death, keitzad? How do you honor a parent in their death? If he cites a Torah statement heard from his father. That assumes your father is smart enough to talk about any Torah. But if your father had said Torah statements, now you're saying them over. Say, my father, Hashem, would always say the following. So, lo yomar kach. Don't just merely say, so-and-so my father said this Dvar Torah. Elakach Amar, you say the following, you add a clause. A lot of people don't know this. Abba Mori, my father and my master, and now he puts like in a brackets. Hareini Kaporas Mishkavo, may I be an atonement for his soul. Now that's an honorable statement. We'll explain what that does. Let's look at the notes. Literally means his resting place. I should be an atonement for his resting place, but it means his soul. What does that mean? I accept upon myself any evil that would befall his soul as a punishment for his misdeeds in this world. In other words, a father, let's say, does averos, and the next world is going to be punished. So he says, you know what, instead of my father getting the punishments in the next world, let me be in it. Don't let me get the punishments for him. That's how you honor your father. If you recall at Shal Shudas, we mentioned that for every avera you do, you're going to get some kind of punishment. But the question is, where is the worst punishment? So whatever avera, whatever punishment you get in this world, it's a diluted substitute of what's supposed to come in the next world. Let's say, for example, you did avera X. Avera X warrants, you know, X times what punishment. Now, in the next world, the punishments are magnified. Go to Gehenna for an Avera, that's a huge punishment. Okay? If you get something in this world, instead of that, the punishment of the suffering here will be much less, but it'll be as effective to wipe out the blotch, so you don't get it in the next world. You follow? So you do Avera X. There's two ways you can get punished for it and cleaned out from it. Either something happens to you bad in this world, or something happens bad to you in Gehenna. In Gehenna, it's going to be much worse. To get it rid of it once you're dead, it's harder and it takes more punishment to get it. It's always better to get the suffering in this world. Okay. So now what the son is saying, my father died. He may be having punishments in the next world. Let me be an atonement for his soul. Give me some of that suffering. And there's good reason for it. Number one, your father's not going to suffer. Number two, the suffering you're getting isn't close to what your father would have been getting. So it'll be something that you could tolerate, hopefully, in this world. Let's say you lose some money. You lose some money, a business deal goes sour, you lose $50,000. Okay, so you lost that, and instead of that, and that's a couple, we say it should be a kapara.
Is that only in the first year?
That's what Gomorrah is going to discuss in a minute.
Let me just
finish one more line, then I'll take your questions. See, and then Gomorrah elaborates and says, Vahani Mili, when do we say this? Tok Shnei Masar Chodesh, within the first 12 months of the father's death. Because it's during that time the father gets punished. Now 12 months is the extreme, because that's for a rush. If it's less than 12 months, it's 11 months. But when you say, here it is, in stating may I be an atonement for 12 full months, the son allows for the possibility that his father was regarded as a wicked person and it was punished for the maximum period of time. Remember, the Taz questions why then a son recites the mourner's goddess for only 11 months with the intent to demonstrate his father was not regarded as wicked. So it's a question. As we say Kaddish for 11 months, unless you know your father was wicked. If a person knows that the father was wicked, you say it. Well, let's put it this way. If you knew your father was not religious, you definitely should say it for 12 months. If it wasn't Shomer Shabbos Jew, you know, he's going to get punished for 12 months. There's no question about it. Now, a rabbi will not directly say that, because, you know, but it depends what the person knows that the person doesn't know. You know, there are times when I'm saying Kaddish for people, you know, they pay to say Kaddish, and I try to find out if the person religious or not. All right, if they're not religious, I say it for 12 months for them. Because, and now a child has to do it because they have to honor their parents. It's not honorable to say, Dad, you were a Russian. Right, but if it's not, I'm not the son, so that's no problem with me saying Kaddish for 12 months. And if people, you know, don't know and they're not that savvy, you know about the 11-month rule, and I know that they're not so religious, there's a number of things here. It's an old Shiloh. You know, this was brought up in the olden days already, in the olden days, whatever, 60, 70 years ago, when people were saying Kaddish. In those days already, the people themselves weren't religious. They never came to shul. So they asked the rabbi, how long should I come to shul and say Kaddish? The rabbi said, a whole year. Why? Because after the, as soon as they said not to come, they stopped coming. So why should they only come for 11 months and then come for 12 months? So they tell the son to come for 12 months. They didn't know any better. Right? So sometimes it's better have them come for 12 months, say, Kaddish, what could you lose? Right? So, but in a conventional sense, if your father was a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, God-fearing Jew, clearly we don't say more than 11 months, but you still say, Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo. You still say that should be an atonement for my father, and the Taz questions, well, how do we resolve that? And that needs further research to understand that. So that's why in the first 12 months, you say Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo, and you should know that those first 12 months, you can be more liable for certain mishaps to happen during that year. But listen, wouldn't you do that for your father? Right? Would you have for your father? If your father needed a kidney, would you not donate a kidney to him? I hope you would. If your father needed money, wouldn't you give money to support him in whatever he needs? So now you take a hit. Now we're not going to say you're going to die for him. You know, remember, it's not as bad. Whatever pain you're feeling, he's feeling a lot less. A lot less. When you're going to take the hit for him. So it's not just you're reducing from him the amount of pain you had, you're reducing tenfold the pain, because if he would have had to have in Gehenna, it's a lot worse. So therefore, it's better to take the hit. And whatever it is, you know, we're not saying it's going to kill you, but it's going to be a year with some tzaras. That's saying Hareini Kapara. So I'm taking. I want it to be a. Remember, it only works if it's a kapara. You have to remember when you get when Hashem causes suffering to come in your life, and it's meant to be a cleansing. It only works as a cleansing if you take it as a cleansing. You take it as a cleansing. You say, "Okay, Hashem, I makabel it. I accept it with love." Hashem says, okay, now it'll clean things up. If you're saying, I don't like what's going on, I hate Hashem for this, why is he doing this? And Hashem says, oh, you're not, I gotta give you a little more then. You didn't wake up yet. I'm trying to get you to do tshuva. Remember, ultimately, you're doing tshuva, aren't you? Whenever suffering comes, you're doing tshuva. That weighs well for your father. So that's what you say in the first year. But mikan la'elah, but after this, whenever you mention your father's name, it seemed to say he was saying a Dvar Torah, but I don't know if it's not only a Dvar Torah. Whenever you say your father's name, Omer, you say, this is an extended version, you say, my father, Zichrono Livracha, may his memory be blessed, Lechaye Olam Haba, for life in the world to come. That's, you have to always refer that way. However, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says they abridge the formula to just Zichrono Livracha. May his memory be a blessing. Therefore, if you notice, you got the abbreviated, and when you write things, you write about your father, that's where it has the Zion Lamed right there. It doesn't touch. Zion Lamed, Zal, Zichron Levracha. It doesn't matter, either parent, father or mother, you say Zichron Levracha, or some say Aleha Shalom, peace should be upon her, it's the same thing, but you want to remember. So that's how you honor a parent. Whenever you talk about your father or mother after their demise, you say Zichrono Livracha or Zichrona Livracha or Alav HaShalom, peace. One should always say something good about a parent, and that's how you give them honor after the lifetime. Shelley, now we finish that. I'll take any questions.
There's two questions. So the first thing, didn't Torah say that you don't punish the father for the sins of the sons and the sons for the sins of the father?
But here he wants to take it. You're volunteering.
Yeah,
so you're volunteering. If you don't volunteer, Hashem ain't gonna do it.
But why would
it's a help. In other words, Torah saying like this: your father in Avera, so you're not gonna suffer for that.
But you can ask for it.
But I can ask for it.
Why would Hashem give you the punishment?
But you can ask
it. The one who was supposed to get the punishment.
Because that alleviates from him. You are a parent and a child of a very. They're not just two separate people. The wording of the Gemara is a child is an appendage of the parent. Is an appendage of the parent. That means you in this room, your father is connected to you right now. So if something happens to you, it's happening to your father. Okay, so if your father was to get a certain amount of suffering, so if you get it here, your father's very well aware of that, and the suffering he gets is much, much less in just knowing that you're suffering as opposed to him getting it in Gehenna. Okay. So you can volunteer to say, I'm willing to take it. Now, if you don't want to, you say, listen, Dad, you can rot in hell. I couldn't give a damn about you. You could do that. You don't have to take it on. But it's part of honoring. Look, it's part of honoring. Remember, you are fulfilling a mitzvah. That's what the Brisa says. Let's go back. You honor them in your lifetime and in their death. You fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. You know, which is important. So, you know, some people, not everybody was privileged to have parents live with them for an extended period of time. So if your parent died when you were young, you lost out on the opportunity to honor them. So you can still honor them in their death by always saying, you know, Zichrono Livracha. And in that first year, you could be willing even to take the punishment for them. Okay.
So would you say it's not respectful of your parent to ever mention to anybody, let's say, any shortcoming of your parent, your deceased parent?
What's the benefit?
No benefit, I guess.
Yeah, my father used to have a big temper, used to beat me every Saturday night. First, that's Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
And it's not a good thing to say unless there's something beneficial you're trying to produce out of that.
So I just want to go back, you know that one where we said fortunate for the one who didn't have parents.
Right.
So,
and that was he himself who didn't have parents.
Well, I understand. But I'm just saying, from that logic, you know, he's saying because then he didn't have to worry about transgressing, honoring his parents. But then you could say, better to be a goy and not a Jew because you don't have to worry about 606 mitzvahs. And you don't have to worry about.
No, because if you're a goy, you ain't going into Olam Haba the way a Jew is. That's terrible. But now I'm a Jew. I'm going to go to Haba. But you know what? Why should I have been involved in a mitzvah that's most likely I would have sinned in? You're really touching on a much deeper question, shall we? The deeper question is, the Gemara had a machlokas for 2.5 years. Was it better for man to be created or not? And what, the reason why not is because most people fail in their mission and have to go to hell. Most people fail. God created people for one reason. To serve God, to love God, to get all the benefits of having a relationship with God. That's a beautiful thing. And that's a great reason to be created, in theory. But since the majority of people fail, it's not a question of was it a good idea or not. It's machlok. It's more at the end.
It's Hashem's idea.
At the end of 2.5, but I don't mean to say it was Hashem's idea, bad idea, but did it play itself out in the real world? Did it turn out, you know, did man benefit from it or not from man's perspective? From man's perspective. Where it says, concludes, after 2.5 years of debating, Beis Hill, Beis Sham, he says, better man wasn't created. But now that he did, try your best. Now they did, try your best. So that's really taking your question to the extreme. Gemara is saying, you're right, you know, at the end of the day, it better not to be created. The plan didn't work so well. It better not to be created, but try your best. So the same thing here, you know, yeah, you have a parent, but if not, you know, if you have a parent, try your best. And the truth is, many people fail to many degree in the level, because people, I don't know how, certainly when I was, you know, till I was 18, right, I was never conscious, you know, oh, I owe my father everything. Without him, I would not have been in the world and have that kind of karsatov. I didn't have that. I mean, you honored them, but you know, if I would have felt that deeply, I would have done 10 times more. You know, the idea of, you'll see, anticipating what they need, not be waiting to be asked, you know, did we really feel that way? Do we really feel that they're like the Shekhinah? We're supposed to. Did we really? It's not easy. So, and then for that we get punished. So therefore, he's saying it's a very difficult mitzvah to perform. So if you didn't, it's not the end of the world. What? Let's go another 4 lines so I can get to the 2 dots. Tana Rabban and the rabbis learned the following aspect of honoring parents. Chacham Mishana Shem Avi Vishem Rabo. A sage, we'll explain what it means, must change the name of his father, the name of his teaching, when saying over a teaching, a ruling in their name. Okay? Now take a look at the notes. It's important here. In Talmudic times, a sage would quietly relate his public discourse to a turgum and a spokesman, who then repeated it loudly to the assembly of scholars. You ever find big gedolim? You ever go to, when you go to Hasidish Tish, right? The Rebbe could hardly hear him, right? So in the olden days, yeah, they whispered. He whispered into the spokesman. The spokesman said the words loud, right? So, however, when citing a law but what if the spokesman is saying over from his father or teacher, then he can't use him by name. Okay, in other words, a spokesman could say, Rabbi Yochanan says this, but what if Rabbi Yochanan is your father? Yeah, you don't call your father by his first name. Very important rule. They would say, this is what my father, my master, that means change the name. When you're saying over in your father's name, don't say, you know, if your father's name is Yochanan, says, Yochanan says this. Yochanan says, he's your father, you don't call him Yochanan. You change his name. You say, my father says this. Okay, that's what he means to say. So in general, when a chacham, right, you're saying over words in of your father, you're supposed to change it. But Torgamon, but if you're the spokesman, right? Eina Mishana Lo Shem Avi Lo Shem Rabbi. He doesn't change their name. He says their name to him is attributed, because we have to know who the halacha is like. Okay? Now, let's see that's what the Bryce says. Very cryptic. Now we're just trying to flesh out what does it mean exactly. So Avu Adaman, when it talks about the father, whose father does the spokesman cite by name? Okay? Whose father does he state? Ilema Davudamar, if you're talking about the father of the spokesman himself, well, Otto Turgaman Lav Barchiva, isn't the spokesman not obligated to honor his father? Right? So if the sage attributes a law to the spokesman's father, in other words, the rabbi is mentioning the spokesman's father. The spokesman may not repeat his father's name, but must say, "This is what my father, my master, said." In other words, if the rabbi says a piece of Torah in the name of the spokesman's father, well, of course he has to change them because he can't say his father. So that was that what he means? No. Elam Araba, what does he mean to say? Shem Aviv Shel Chacham v'Shem Rabba Shel Chacham. The spokesman pronounces the name of the sage's father, the sage's teacher. Therefore, although the sage stated to the spokesman, "This is what my father, my master said," the spokesman must announce the name of the sage's father. In other words, when the teacher says, the teacher can't say his father's name. He says, "My father said it." So the spokesman now says, "Rabbi Yochanan said it," because he's not his father. Right? Kiha, de Mar Baravashi, like Mar Baravashi, had the same practice. Kihavi, Dorish, Bepirka, Kihavi, Dorschberger, when he would expound on the lecture and wanted to attribute a law to his father, Ravashi, what would he say? Iu Amar, he would say, Abba Mori, this is what my father, my master said. That's what he said. He always said, my father, my master, wouldn't quote him by name. Vamorai, and his spokesman, but that's what he said to the spokesman. Vamorai, this is what Ravashi said. So you see from here that when you're saying over Torah, when you are talking about your father, you don't call him by name. If the spokesman is saying over about your father, he calls your father a name because he doesn't have to honor his father. That's what it meant. Chacham mishana shem aviv v'shem rabo. A chacham changes the name of his father and his rebbe. Doesn't use the name, but says he's my father and my rebbe. The interpreter, he can't change it, provided it wasn't his father speaking to him, then he can't change it. But what do you see from here, parenthetically? Do you call a father, even when you're not talking to them, do you refer to them by name? And certainly if you talk to them, and you see in the secular world, you know, I don't understand that. A lot of them, they call their parents by their name. And forget about that, what about other older people? You know, an older person comes into the room, you know, let's say my children, when Tony's here, they shouldn't talk to him and say, call him Tony. You say, Mr. Lazaro, because that's the honorable name. Oh, Tony's friends can call him Tony, but children, you have to respect your elders. Forget about it. He's not their father. He's still an elder. He deserves respect. You respect him by calling him Mr. Lazaro, you know, Mr. Scutaro, whatever. And you don't call him Steve and Tony. That's an important thing to realize that, unfortunately, the secular world doesn't understand. Okay, good place to stop at the two dots. Tomorrow we'll get into the details. How do you actually revere a parent? How do you actually...